Crowhill here from Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Today we review an ale and talk about critical race theory. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crowhill. Good evening, Pigweed.
Good evening, Crowhill.
So what's on your mind today?
Football!
It's getting close to that time of year.
Yes, it is. It's right around the corner.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to not watch any football.
You know, Mrs. Crowhill and I were talking about that just today, that apparently the NFL is putting some sort of woke nonsense in the pregame show.
That's a pregame show. Slogans in the end zone. Things on your helmet.
Yeah.
To constantly remind you that we are not having what's, it's already the NFL, the no fun league.
Yeah.
And to constantly remind you that you need to feel guilt and recognize the oppression that is all around you. And don't forget, all cops are bad. Is that what you want to watch while you're watching football?
No, I don't.
I wish that I used to be a huge basketball fan so that I could say I don't watch it, but I never watch basketball anyway. So
yeah,
it's easy to not watch basketball.
I never watch
It'll
basketball.
It'll be harder to not watch football.
Yeah, it will be, because I like football, but it is coming to the point where is it really worth it to support these idiots?
You're on my time now.
Yeah.
When you, everybody can feel free to engage in anything you want, which would actually possibly solve something.
Mm-hmm.
But ruining football game, I'm not sure what you're, you want to take your money and your time, your own time and your own money.
Yeah.
Towards racial justice, whatever that means.
Yeah.
Then do it.
Might just be worthwhile just to skip it this year.
One of my favorite beers is Lagunitas Little Something Something.
Yeah.
And so what is this?
This is Lagunitas Something Easy.
Oh.
Which I thought was going to be a particularly low alcohol beer. But it's not, actually.
Oh.
It's 4.8, I think.
Well, I guess from the 7.5.
No, I'm sorry. No, it's 5.7. It's 5.7.
So it's barely even down from the...
Yeah.
Now, is it down in calories or something?
I don't know why it's so easy. You know, it says, something easy is everything we've learned about making hop-forward beer expressed in a moderate voice, pale, cold, slightly alcoholic, and bitter. It's all we know. Slightly alcoholic. I mean, this is more alcoholic than a Budweiser.
Yes.
So I was expecting something lighter.
Huh.
But anyway, it's got a lovely.
Yeah, you know what?
Color.
I wish it was, because it does have a fuller taste.
Yeah.
than some of the other easy drinking session beers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really hoping that this was going to be 100 calories, and
it's got a very lovely taste. It's you get a little bit of that hop oily flavor in there. You get definite hop bitterness. It's got. Not a whole lot of aroma, but it's got a very nice flavor. So I very much enjoy the beer. I just was kind of expecting this to be more like a 4.2 or something, but whatever.
There you go.
There we go. Lagunitas, you really can't go wrong with Lagunitas.
They they have fun.
Yes. So,
back this up. Because, the NFL didn't invent this.
No.
So, what is at the foundation of it? And the three chicks that invented Black Lives Matter didn't invent this. It goes back further than that. What we're here to discuss is critical race theory, but before you can get to critical race theory, let's get to critical theory.
Because critical race theory is just an application of critical theory.
And it's a straight-up Marxist-inspired movement.
Right.
And it's all about... It says that all institutions, basically all the interactions between human beings, are
premised on class.
Power grabs.
Yes, and premised on class, yeah.
Right. Yes. Oppression.
Yes.
And so everything, so in critical theory, like if you, there's a Marxist view or a critical theory view when you read literature. So there's different ways to read books.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a reader, but as a professor.
Yeah.
And so one of them would be to view the whole book through the eyes of class distinction.
Yeah.
Right? So that, and now it's infested law, history for sure.
Yeah.
And yes, it's just a lens through which you view everything in terms of power and not power.
Yeah, so one thing that's interesting about critical theory and Marxism in general is that this obsession with class seems so odd to Americans.
Uh-huh.
Because we try very hard to not focus so much on class. But in England and
yeah,
Europe
class
in general,
mobility is nothing in America.
Right.
Where you kind of, in England, you have your lot in life.
Yeah.
Right? And be kind of born into it and kind of expect that you're like, you know, the idea, which is weird when you read it, you're like, the Jack London book is like, well, what do you, well, I'm a gentleman. It meant something. It's like, yeah. You literally had to get out of the way.
There were
right,
entirely different social expectations back then. Like, for example, back then, the first child was expected to follow his father in business. The first boy expected the child to follow his father in business. The second boy was expected to go into the military, and the third boy was expected to go into the ministry.
Okay.
It was just kind of like, that's the way it works.
Well, there you go.
If you're child number one, this is what you do. If you're child number two, so,
and I could see, and you could look at that as a certain level of oppression, right? You're like, you know, you're not a free-thinking, autonomous being. You're strapped in this, a system which is bigger than you that controls your actions and your opportunities.
I love to read Sherlock Holmes.
Uh-huh.
And I've read all the Sherlock Holmes stories many times.
Let's see, Victorian, like late 1800s?
Yeah, late 1800s. So you have, every once in a while you hear a reference like, what did he look like? Well, he was dressed as a gentleman.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a visible difference between the classes. If somebody dressed as a workman would be different than somebody dressed as a gentleman, where nowadays you see Mark Zuckerberg walking around looking like a bum, and he's like one of the most powerful and wealthy men on the planet.
Yeah, so, Steve Jobs only had one outfit, a mock neck black turtleneck and jeans.
Right, yeah, that was it. So the concept, the class distinction that suffuses everything that Marx talks about makes much more sense to Europeans than it does to Americans, I think.
Interesting. Now, this here is provides some insight to a couple of things that you'll see through our discussion of critical race theory. It's believing that science, like other forms of knowledge, has been used as an instrument of oppression.
Right.
They caution against blind faith in scientific progress, arguing that scientific knowledge must be not pursued as an end in itself without reference to the goal of human emancipation.
Yeah.
So, remember that lame infographic from Smithsonian's African American Museum?
I do.
Where it had, you know, these elements of whiteness.
Yeah.
And include things like critical thinking, the scientific method.
Showing up on time.
Rational thinking, logic.
I know.
So, I mean, that's where this stuff comes from.
That's the festering pool of this stuff
comes
from.
There's the other thing I thought. I think we discussed one time what the heck does it mean to speak your truth? Well, there is no objective truth. That's still boring. You know, really, it comes out of this thinking.
Right. Yes. Although, I have to say a word in favor of this, which is the idea of science being used as a form of oppression is actually what we're seeing all around us nowadays with psychology and other kinds of things.
Biden says he'll shut down the entire country if science says
so. Exactly. So the idea
that's
of science being used as a form of oppression,
right.
Yeah, that's true. But on the other hand, science also gives us cell phones and
vaccines.
You know, and vaccines. So you can't. So I will admit, yes, science can be a tool of oppression, and sometimes is, and sometimes very obviously is in our culture today.
But the scientific method itself.
Yeah, to
or,
say that
you know,
science is inherently
mathematics,
that way.
Right. Or, you're right?
Yeah.
That's kind of.
That's taking it a little far. Yeah, so the problem is, yes, every system, every form of knowledge, every form of power will be used to oppress people because people are rotten bastards, and that's what they do.
That's what they do.
They use power to oppress people.
Right, and the other thing that you can't deny, well, your Marxist critical theorists wouldn't deny, but would say that we could reject, is hierarchy.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry. What does Jordan Peterson say? Even lobsters have hierarchy.
Right.
Right? I mean, so the idea that we're going to get rid of class, and we're going to get rid of hierarchy. So So nobody's in charge? Well, that's what the anarchists would say, which is, you know, you see what you, then you get Portland. So somebody's got to be in charge. Somebody's got to make rules. Yes. Somebody's got to enforce rules.
Yeah.
Now, yes, if you want to get rid of the aristocracy because, you know, they're hogging up all the land and, yeah, all right, I mean, I get that, but you're not going to rid life of hierarchy.
Yeah, so the Marxist progression would be, as I understand it, mm-hmm. I'm not an expert by any means, but my understanding would be, so first of all, you explain to the workers that they're being oppressed, mm-hmm. and you get them to rise up and revolt. And then you have the dictatorship of the proletariat, yeah. where they then go and take all the wealth and accumulated money from all the rich guys, and they spread it all out. And
like Bill de Blasio.
Spread it all out and have pure communism. The problem is, it never gets to that point.
No.
You get to the point where you overthrow the rich people, and then the people who are like the party elders, the people in charge of the party, they hold on to all that wealth. You never get to the redistribution part.
Yeah. Stalin's own mother saw the lavish lifestyle he lived. He says, gosh, wait till the communists find out about this.
Yes. So the idea of you're being oppressed, overthrow your oppressors, yeah, that part works.
Yeah.
And then you have a revolution, and then you get rid of all the rich people, and you steal their wealth and everything. But the idea of then redistributing it and having a pure communist system, that just never seems to happen. It hasn't happened anywhere in the world yet.
Yeah, no, you know, and the worst of it was Cambodia, where basically if you were privileged enough to have glasses, that meant you're going down.
Wow, and so it's everybody's interest for people who need glasses not to wear them, like when they're driving around.
so you take everybody with power is sent out to the rice paddies, and all of those people are put into their homes. I don't know. What are they? The professors and engineers? Do they get the professors and engineers jobs too? Yeah. Or
so there's so many problems with the whole thing. Often the people who are the ones in power are the people who are actually competent and the ones who are making the food that you eat every day. But
yeah,
anyway,
that's right. That's why the 100 million people die. That's sort of 50-50 between murdered in re-education camps and starving to death because of the incompetence.
Because they got rid of the competent people
who know what they're doing.
So that's the world in which critical theory, the world in which critical race theory was born.
Yes.
And critical race theory, rather than looking at in terms of class, I guess it's a very American thing, because in America, class is not so obvious. I remember reading this story about some German aristocrat who came to America and was very upset that he couldn't tell by looking at somebody whether they were upper class or lower class.
Because
in Germany, you would dress, you know, the upper class would dress a certain way, the lower class would dress a certain way, and you could tell looking at somebody what their class was.
So what if a low class guy goes out and buys a fancy suit and a top hat?
It was against the law. It was against the law to dress outside of your class. So actually, that I wanted to get into that later on in terms of some of the things about oppression, because that was obviously a form of oppression, forcing people to dress a certain way. But in America, you didn't have that, except for one thing.
Okay.
So you don't have this expression of class, at least among the white people. But you do have it visibly when you say the black guys are the slaves, right? So I think that's where we get the impetus, the kernel of truth in critical race theory, which is that at a certain time in the United States, you definitely could tell one class from another, at least in that respect.
Yes, and the power structure was obvious.
Mm-hmm.
The oppression, who was oppressed and who was not, was obvious.
Yes.
And, but this is I'm going to get into this more later. The idea of fast forwarding. Did you hear that guy's discussion of that? It's like, would you talk about something that happened in the past in America therefore,
yes.
Like spending all this time. They love to talk about redlining.
Yeah. Right?
Redlining is 50 years old.
And it's against the law.
Yes. It's been against the law forever.
Right.
So, so this is kind of a fast forwarding. It's like,
yes.
Remember that time when,
yes.
like, yeah, therefore.
Therefore,
really?
That's true now. Yeah. Right. So that is a big part of the problem. But I think one of the tie-ins here into critical race theory is that in America, the distinction by class, the visibility of distinction by class does really come down to race, or it did really come down to race.
Yeah.
So
now that it does, so your Thomas Sowell's or your anybody who's successful now,
Oprah, how about
your Oprah's? I mean, what claim can you make?
Yeah. Yeah.
How can you buy into this? And the aspect of it, I think that is important is that now every dysfunctional condition in black urban communities can be traced to slavery and its aftermath.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of things that bug me about critical race theory. One of them is they would say race is central to the American experience. Okay, now, if we were in 1845 and someone said race is central to the American experience, I would say, well, you say that with some justice, right? That obviously, I wouldn't say that race is like central as being the only most important controlling thing, but it was obviously a very, very important thing in 1845, right? Is race central to the American experience today? Well, you know, it wasn't 10 years ago. It wasn't 15 years ago, maybe. But it's becoming more and more central, not because it really is, but because all these agitators are growing out making it that way.
Well, that's what I don't get. The same people that explain that race is a social construct,
mm-hmm.
which, so genetically, I mean,
genetically,
I'm not even,
race is kind of nonsense.
I'm not even sure if you, I don't know, if you found a bone, could you tell if, you know, I mean,
there,
like
there are differences.
Like a forensic.
Yes, yes there are slight differences between people groups around the world,
uh-huh.
but I don't know that they map precisely to race.
Yeah.
So if you take an African skull and a European skull, there are slight differences between the skulls. So yes, you can tell to some extent, but those things don't map precisely onto the way we currently divide race.
Right. Like, now, if you look at race as a social construct in the same way that the gender argument is, it's like gender is a social construct,
mm-hmm.
which is nuts. But the argument is we need to stop talking about that. We
yes.
need to stop identifying people by their gender. Right? That's how that would work.
Mm-hmm.
So if the race as a social construct would have to be making the same argument, we just need to forget about race. It's not anything. It's to be discarded. But these are the same people who are in love with identity politics, which says your race is everything. I know everything about you by looking at you from across the room.
Yeah. Yes.
So what is it? You can't have both.
No, you can't. But somehow or other, they're holding these two ridiculous notions in tension and believing both of them. So, I was trying to figure out what the heck critical race theory is. So I watched a couple of videos on it, and one of them had, well, first of all, there was a definition. Critical race theory is an academic discipline, it says which, that maintains society is divided along racial lines into white oppressors and black victims.
Right, so that's the Marxist aspect.
Yes,
of it.
Exactly. Similar to the way Marxism frames the oppressor-victim dichotomy along class lines. Okay, so the Encyclopedia Britannica says critical race theory is the view that the law and legal institutions are inherently racist and that race itself, instead of being biologically grounded and natural, is a socially constructed concept that is used by white people to further their economic and political interests at the expense of people of color to maintain elite white interests in labor markets and politics, giving rise to poverty and criminality in minority communities. So I read that, and I had a mixed reaction to it. First of all, that race is a socially constructed concept, I would say that's mostly true.
Mm-hmm.
While there are distinctions between people around the world, that distinctions within races are greater than distinctions between races.
Yeah.
That race is biologically a relatively meaningless concept. It's mostly a social concept. So I mostly agree with that. The idea that white people use power to further their economic and political interests at the expense of people of color, I would say that was absolutely true 200 years ago. I really don't think it's quite as true today. And I think it's wrong. It's the fast.
No, I would think you should go back to Marx. People are people are always looking to get over on the next guy.
Yeah.
But it's just as easy for a rich and connected black man to oppress, you know, his workers, right? Yes. He owns a company, and he's got his workers, and he's making the system work for him.
That's right.
So the race is not baked into the system.
So then the last one here, to maintain elite white interests in labor markets and politics, giving rise to poverty and criminality. My reaction was, how in the world is it to white people's benefit to increase poverty and criminality among blacks? How does that help anybody?
And I think, what about the 19 million white people living in poverty? Do you think that they feel that they've got some real advantage?
So some elements of critical race theory, I would say, okay, I understand where you're coming from and what you mean, especially in the past. If we're gonna talk about 1945 or 1845, I get it. I understand what you're saying. But
the way that Marx makes a lot more sense when you're talking about Tsarist Russia.
Yeah, that's right.
Than you are now, which I'd like to just touch on this one point, is Marx's theory has never worked out in the sense that it was always a society goes from agrarian to industrial. The industrial worker gets oppressed and he overthrows his awful masters. But these are all agrarian cultures.
Right.
Cuba, because he figured England was where it was going to happen.
Right. And that's not working.
And it never happened. It's China and Cuba and Cambodia and Russia, none of these were industrial nations.
No.
So the progression of his theory has never panned out, and yet he's still the genius of the left.
So from these videos that I watched, one of them came up with five tenets of critical race theory. And honestly, I thought these were just gobbledygook. One was called counter storytelling. The one was called the permanence of racism. The idea that racism never goes away. It's just absolutely part of society. Whiteness as pride. I'm not even going
to
read them.
You know what that sounds like to me? It sounds to me that somebody went on sabbatical. They're responsible now for publishing. And you can't, you have to publish something that almost doesn't make any sense in academic circles to say, look how smart I am.
Yes. And that's right. It's kind of like the show we did on gobbledygook in social science papers, where people submitted just nonsense papers and got them published.
All those fake papers and they all got through.
So then this other division of critical race theory into four tenets, which I found much more helpful. One was epistemological idealism. And that's the idea that objectivity is best reached through rational thought, is a specifically Western and masculine way of thinking. In other words, that what matters is the personal and the social psychology. And then we discover truth based on our individual or group experience. And it's not like there's any objective thing to appeal to.
You can't challenge it.
Right.
You're going, that's my truth. Right. Yeah. That's my truth comes from. You're like, all right. So, do you want to make policy on facts and data, or are we going to make it on feelings and anecdote? Feelings and anecdote. Well, all right, here we go.
Right. So then the next tenet from this other division of it was ideology is oppression. And the idea that whiteness rests upon a foundational premise that whites are the norm and standard for human, and people of color are a deviation from that norm.
Right.
White supremacy is the powerful ideology that promotes the idea of whiteness as the ideal for humanity. And Western society oppresses other narratives. All the things that have happened in Western society, like mathematics, for example, we need to have an anti-racist mathematics. There's no such thing as a math truth. It all has to do with white power structures.
Even in terms of math and science?
Yes, you have to have... Because math and science, like, I don't know if you've seen this, but there are a lot of people who say 2 + 2 = 4 is a racist, white power concept.
You'd have to graduate from Harvard
to think that. Okay, next one. Individuality is incidental. Identity and rights are conferred by one's group status, either oppressor or oppressed. And that's where we get things like the oppression matrix, which we made good fun of. Remember when we did our political matrix on the wall over there?
Is that what we were doing? Yeah. That was pretty good.
That was pretty good. Yeah. And then the last one is justice is sociopolitical. Liberation of oppressed groups occurs by taking power from the oppressor group at any cost.
Oh, yeah.
All relationships are based on power.
Oh, yeah. Now we're getting somewhere.
And then this one, which I thought was particularly loathsome, was that religious ideas that make people all equal are wrong and must be opposed. So, for example, the concept all men are created equal.
all lives matter.
Yeah, right. You can't say that. That's wrong, and that kind of concept must be opposed.
Now, as far as I can tell, I can't see them actually... This is straight-up revolutionary thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a good way, because...
But Marxism is all about revolution.
It's exactly what it is. Yes. It doesn't offer the replacement. It only offers what needs to be torn down.
Yes.
So there are volumes and volumes and volumes of why these systems need to be torn down, and basically nothing about what replaces them. Fortunately, we have 100 years to see what replaces them and how'd it go.
But isn't that exactly what happened in Portland? Defund the police,
yep.
Get rid of the police,
yep.
And now we're going to put up our new thing. Well, now, who's gonna be in charge? Oh, Joe, drunk Joe with his AK-47 is gonna be in charge over there.
Yeah.
You know, they have nothing.
Yes, the local warlord.
Yeah.
And they put up fences and they put up checkpoints and they brought out the guns.
And they oppressed people and they beat people up. They didn't have any policies. They didn't have any procedures. They didn't have any. There's no way of ensuring justice. So they tear something down, but they have nothing to replace it with.
No, I mean there's nothing in. This is why you need to be suspicious of Black Lives Matter, is it's just what we don't like.
Yeah.
Nothing about what we want.
Right.
And because they don't want to articulate that, because they want the whole damn thing to come down.
Well,
it's not like we've got a problem in this area and that area, and so we need additional training over there and new laws over there. They don't offer any solutions at all for that reason.
Here's one of the real mysteries about Black Lives Matter. Is they are straight up Marxists, right?
Which
means
three female self-proclaimed trained Marxists. Okay,
right.
I'm not calling people names here.
That's what they say about themselves,
yeah.
Right? So what do Marxists want to do? Well, they want to have a revolution,
yeah.
Where they take all the money,
yes.
From the rich people and redistribute it. So why are the rich people? Why is Microsoft giving money to Black Lives Matter?
Oh, well, this is going to come in my conclusion, but since you're asking me now, it's all the rich and powerful who vocalize support think that they're buying protection.
Right.
But it's not going to happen. They're willing dupes and useful idiots. I wrote this down, and 2 hours later, Trump is like, I don't know who's funding this, and I don't know who's in charge of this, but these people are going to be the first to go.
Yes.
When they take over.
Who's going to be the first against the wall? Once the
Marxists
take over.
It's going to be the George Soros's.
And
you think?
And Zuckerberg and Bill Gates.
Yes.
All the people with power.
Are you kidding me?
They're going to be up against the wall dead. So why in the world are they contributing to this? It's inconceivable.
I mean, how the smartest men in the world are scared and dumb.
Yes. It's amazing. It's very short-sighted.
So this is what I think of this is my analogy here. The protesters in the streets are toddlers lying on the floor in a supermarket.
Yeah.
And someone is standing over them going, Johnny, what do you want? What's the problem? Use your words. Racial justice! Well, Johnny, that's not enough. You need to explain yourself. What do you want?
Racial justice!
And then so at some point, you know what happens? Somebody reaches down, grabs him by the arm, yanks him, leaves the grocery cart there, takes him to the car and says, wait till we get home.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully somebody's going to...
I don't think that's going to happen.
you might be right. Because at this point, once you've got... sports, celebrity, politicians, right? I mean, everybody's on board with this throat cutting.
Yeah.
So
I don't understand how we're going to get out of this without. Well, first of all, we have to crack down on the craziness that's going on. We need to stop allowing these babies to go out and have their temper tantrums. But nobody seems to have the will to do that. And That really surprises me. I guess.
There's already cracks in that. Now Joe is now becoming trying to come in with a little bit of law and order.
Just a little bit.
Just enough. Because he thinks that, or he's trying to sell the idea that if you elect me, this will all stop.
Yeah. Well, and to some extent, I think that's true. To some extent, I think if Biden wins, then it will stop a lot of this, because a lot of these people are demonstrating because they hate Trump.
Yeah, and but a lot of them, the super violent ones, the Antifas, the BLM Marxists,
yeah.
that's not enough.
No.
That's not enough. I mean, because they're going after these pussy mayors.
Yes.
I
agree with that, but that's like 2% of the people who are out demonstrating.
But those are only 2% who are burning things down.
Yes, exactly. Blood. Exactly. Exactly. But if Biden were to get elected, then like 90% of the protests would wither away, and all you'd have left are the 2% crazy radicals.
And they're recognized. Well, you know, they've got their internal polling data, and they're going, yeah. This is not working for us. We thought maybe we could blame the chaos on Trump. That's not how the voter sees it.
No, no. And it's really, I didn't think we had slid quite so far into madness as we have. And we clearly have slid into madness. And it makes me concerned, because I don't know what's going to stop it. How are we going to stop this unlawfulness?
Yes, well, you know, my analogy, wait till we get home, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a glimmer of hope. Like, all right, somebody's going to come in and take care of this. But I'm going to invoke reductum ad Hitlerium.
Okay, yes.
All arguments eventually end up talking about Hitler.
Okay, true,
and
yes.
So I am, in the early days of the rise of the Nazis,
yep.
All of the reasonable people were going, you know, this is going to burn itself out and cooler heads will prevail.
Yeah.
And so So this is my caution to myself.
Yes.
So at the same time that I'm saying this is going to burn itself out, yep, and cooler heads will prevail, yeah, people thought about that in the 30s too.
Yeah.
So it's possible that it doesn't do that, but here is my glimmer of hope.
Okay.
And it isn't pretty, though, that we still have a constitution. Well, it's something, yes, we still have a constitution, that there's a silent majority. Who has been very, 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 very patient. And this silent majority not only believes in the First Amendment, they believe that the Second Amendment is there to enforce the First Amendment. And these people are well armed. So this is not Germany in the 30s, mm-hmm, in terms of an armed citizenry that will push back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a scary and violent scenario, but it's what makes me think that we won't go full Marxist, but it's every intention. It's every, do not doubt me.
So here's my glimmer of hope.
All right.
My glimmer of hope is that so much money is at stake. That once, you know, right now it's like these crazy people are saying these things and they're burning
down. The rich people think that they can buy them off and keep their money.
Exactly.
Yes.
The rich people think, let's just let this burn out. Let's let the children have their temper tantrum. And then after a little while, things will get back to normal. We can start making more money. Actually, they're making tons of money right now. But if it gets to the point that it actually threatens their money,
Jeff Bezos falls to the third richest man in the world.
Yeah, then all of a sudden, things are going to change really, really fast. Because the people with the money are going to say, you better fix this, and you better fix this tomorrow. Okay. And that's when the change is going to happen. And I'm surprised that it hasn't happened yet. But in my mind, my hope that things will finally get fixed is that once the people with money feel threatened, then they'll say, you better stop this now.
And hopefully it's before they're guillotined with an actual guillotine.
Yes.
It's right. So what was Jeff Bezos' crime that he deserved to have his head chopped off? I mean, he's a woke liberal who owns the Washington Post? I mean, what?
His crime is just that he's part of the oppressor class.
That's it.
He's rich.
He's just rich. And he's all it needs. So this new woke world that you think you're going to get is going to come at your expense. Mm-hmm. And don't think that you're going to buy your way out of it.
Yeah, so Jeff, if you're listening, don't think that it's a good idea to be giving money to these guys.
We got to talk about, we haven't even got to the systemic racism. The idea that all systems, like I said, they don't want to tweak things. They don't want to nibble around the corners and fix them, right?
Yeah.
It's a full top-down.
Yes.
So once you, and they're doing it, instead of through oppression, critical theory, Marxist, we're taking what's ours because we're being oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Critical race theory, we're taking what's ours because we're being oppressed. And it's because we're black, and all of the systems, all of them, are inherently racist, and racist by design.
Yes.
That means they're all illegitimate.
Yeah.
Which includes the Constitution.
Now, here's the thing that I don't understand about critical race theory. From Marx's perspective, if you have a problem of a class oppressing a class, and then the proletariat rise up and take the wealth from the bourgeoisie and redistribute it, and then eliminate class. Okay? It's not going to happen. It never has happened. Fine. But at least that's a theory. I can see it. From the perspective of critical race theory, what is the solution? If everything has to do with race, and if race is permanent, and if everything is inherently racist...
And there's no amount of apology or redemption for white people.
Yeah. So what is the solution? I don't understand. Like in straight Marxism, I see the solution, which is the proletariat overthrows the bourgeoisie. They redistribute the wealth, and now everything's lovely and we have a communist society.
It's a theory.
It's a workable theory. It's a work. It's at least conceptually. Mentally. Yes, you can think of it, but I don't understand how critical race theory gets through that.
Gets
you anywhere because if race is forever. And if racism is forever, and it can't be changed, then what are you going to do? You can't make a non-racial society.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. I mean, back in the like late 70s, early 80s.
They're pushing for segregation. So maybe we'll divide the country up, and you get 13% of the land. And
maybe that's I have no idea what their solution is. It doesn't seem to make any sense to me because. Like, back in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a concept of let's have a non-racial society, right? Let's have whites and blacks and Asians and everybody else mingle together, and let's get rid of this problem of race.
That's what I said earlier. How do you square the two between race is a social construct that can be dismissed, and race is the all-important factor in all human interaction.
Right. I don't get what their end game is. And I don't see how they see any solution or how they see any path.
What would be the definition of, all right, we're not going to kneel for the flag anymore now that we've gotten what we want?
Yeah.
Without saying what you want, Johnny on the supermarket floor.
Yeah, what's the definition of success? I don't see
what is racial justice. So this is something. This is going to take a whole other show. Is this stupid idea of outcome equals the percentage of outcome? So there should only be 13% of blacks in prison. There should only be 13% of astrophysicists. There should be 13% of whatever.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that would be satisfy them either. The critical race theorists. I'm not sure that would satisfy them either.
No. But it is part of this flawed thinking on the what racial injustice means.
Yes.
So the other thing. All right, we're gonna have to come back to.
We're gonna have to come back to systemic racism.
So you've got CRT. Yes. You've got systemic racism. You've got all cops are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got outcome must reflect population, and This is exhausting.
It is exhausting. It's very, very frustrating when you have a movement that has gained such popular support and is so influential and is doing all this, and you just can't even figure out what in the heck they want.
How about this? Marx, actual Marx and current wokeness.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So for Marx, well, first off, if you're rich and powerful, you just die. And
yeah.
If you're semi-rich, it will just take all your stuff as long as you get on board.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to get on board, repeat all of the correct slogans.
Yeah.
Show everybody how much you support the revolution, that you definitely not the enemy of the revolution. If that's not convincing enough, you get sent to re-education camps,
yeah,
where you may or may not die.
Yeah.
And so, in wokeness, now you've got white silence.
Mm-hmm.
Silence equals violence.
Yeah.
So that's if you're not chanting back,
yeah,
the chants retell you that you've got intimidating diners,
yeah,
forcing them to raise their fists. You've got, it's coerced support. So this is all straight Marxist, right?
Mm-hmm.
The re-education camps of today are the HR seminars,
yeah,
where, again, you're told this is what you're going to think.
Yeah.
And the execution of the Marxist revolution is getting canceled, fired, and demonetized.
Right.
So, I mean, it maps on. So again, I'm not name-calling here. This is what they say, and this is as clear as it can get. This is straight-up Marxism.
It is straight-up Marxism, and the scary thing about Marxism is that it calls for violent revolution, and I don't want
always,
violent revolution.
Yes, there's always violence involved, and, you know, you can
so
see
So, I
it.
Heard somebody the other day say, what's the difference between communism and socialism? And AK-47.
Ah! Yes, 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 yes. So, I guess you want to move on to the man of the week?
I think we got to call the quotes for this.
All right, let me just say that the worst ideas of the last century,
yeah,
are found in Marxism, and the worst ideas of the last decade are found in critical race theory, and BLM embraces them both.
So I guess that means you don't like BLM very much.
I mean, listen, remember the Clive Bundy thing, standoff in Wyoming, where,
yeah,
the over property rights,
yeah,
or grazing rights,
yeah,
and stuff,
yeah, yeah,
like that? I'm listening to it, and the guy keeps talking about the BLM. I'm going, what is Black Lives Matter doing in Wyoming?
The Bureau of Land Management. That's right.
Yeah. Like, what do they care about grazing rights in Wyoming? That's kind of far afield for the Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I wonder if BLM sounds a lot like BM. I wonder, is there a way to put this together?
All right. Well, so I guess we've got a few more shows in the future.
We do. So let's get to our man of the week. Who have we got going?
Well, generally, the man of the week has nothing to do with the topic of the week.
Right.
However, this time it does.
This time it does.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's,
yeah,
going to have to be, because it's going to have to be, because this is breaking news here.
Okay.
This is Casey Peterson, an electrical engineer at Sandia Labs. Sandia Labs, a federally funded research agency that designs American nuclear weapons.
Right.
16,000 employees.
Wow.
And they have instituted this critical race theory indoctrination program,
yep,
for everybody at a, you know, this is, it's federally, I mean, it's private,
yeah,
but it's entirely federal at the same
because
time.
Because nobody,
right,
in management, when somebody comes along and says, we have to do a thing on whatever,
yeah,
nobody in management has the courage,
yeah,
to say, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. So, well, Casey Peterson said he pushed back, and he made a very long, hour-long video and sent it out. I guess, you know, you have that at your work where there's a database or,
yeah,
whatever where you can blast it to everybody,
right,
that works there.
Yeah.
And boy, they came back within hours. They came at him and he said, we need to completely rip critical race theory out of Sandia, root and stem. It is a cancer and we need to get rid of it right now.
He reminds me of the D'Amour at Google. You know, as the sensible guy standing up against the great big power. But yeah. I watched his video, and it was very good.
I did, too. He says that Sandia executives have made it clear they want to force critical race theory, race-segregated training, and white male re-education camps on their employees. All dissent will be severely punished. Progressive employees will be rewarded. Conservative employees will be purged.
Yeah.
So now the thing I read, they said at this point, either the executives back down, and he wins, or he gets fired and proves his point, and he wins. Of course, he loses his job. Yeah. But
well, that's the obvious answer.
However,
he'll get fired.
It could make him a bit of a, you know, he might make him a bit of a rock star.
Maybe.
Now, I don't know if he'll get rehired.
It might make him a bit of a rock star, but it doesn't change the underlying rot in society, which is that some baby crying on the grocery store floor, flailing around having a temper tantrum, saying, I want this, I want that. Nobody's willing to say, shut up, kid. You know, this is not the way it's done. And right now, corporate America is just giving in to these crying, whining
babies.
And
one of the corporations is the NFL that won't say you know what they said? They said, refusing to play is a legitimate form of protest. Really? What other jobs can you just not show up to work for because you're mad about
some five-second
video you saw that happened on the other side of the country?
Right. It's absolute nonsense, and people do not have the courage to stand up against this, and that is the crucial problem that we have to get past. And if we don't get past it soon, I don't know what the heck's going to happen.
Well, this just happened last week.
Yeah,
and he has hinted to so he has an hour long video, but there are many times throughout the video he's going, "We'll get to that in a later episode." So he's got plans.
Good.
And who knows, man? Maybe that will be his new job, and he'll make more money than he did as a. But then this cancer will continue at this 16,000 federally funded corporation, and hopefully, yes, somebody investigates this. It says he was told that there's no place for politics.
Yeah.
At this company, and so he proposed. He went through all these channels. My God, the levels of HR that he had to go through. Yeah. I didn't realize that they.
You know,
didn't
for
exist.
all the things that Donald Trump has done to fight back against the nonsense, there is so much nonsense out there that I always feel like.
I mean, could you imagine George Bush tippy toeing around?
Oh gosh,
Mitt Romney or John McCain?
No, they're such a bunch of babies.
No, they created Donald Trump. Don't you forget about that?
That's right.
Donald Trump. Yeah. In a normal world, you'd never see a Donald Trump.
No.
You made him happen.
They made him happen by being such a bunch of pussies. That's what happened. So, Casey Peterson, well done.
And we're going to keep an eye on you.
Yeah. And I hope this works. I hope. I don't believe it. I give it like maybe a 2% chance.
What? 2?
Yes.
I was going to give him like 25.
Okay. Well, I give him a very, very low chance of success. But I wish you the best of success. I hope you can stem the tide of lunacy at Sandia Labs, but I really don't think it's going to happen.
You know, stem is racist because they're not a proper proportion of... all right. There we go.
Cheers.